better to be inside listening to music today than outside sweating it off. I know we don't have it in the queue anywhere, but Glenn Frey's The Heat Is On. Next summer, we will have that as bumper music. It's hot. And, you know, it's going to stay hot. You look at the extended forecast, and it's the only time you see an 8 is when it's behind a 9. And it doesn't matter where you are in South Carolina, from the coast, Midlands, poor people down there. They get the worst of it. The coast at least has that sea breeze in the afternoon. Sometimes it'll cool you off. We've got the mountains, which, you know, help us at times. But, boy, there's people down along Columbia and all that. Oof. They don't get any relief. None whatsoever. Hope everybody had a great 4th of July. Hope you enjoyed the show. We had one of the founders from Salute the Shore on and a fighter pilot from Shaw Air Force Base. I hope if you were on the South Carolina coast, you at least knew what was going on, and if you didn't have your flag out there, you're making plans for next year. It's fun being involved in things like that. So welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz, and I'll be with you for the next hour. Thank you for tuning in. If you want to call in today, I've just got a bunch of stuff to go through. It seems like I can never get through it all, and it just keeps piling up. So I didn't schedule anybody coming on today because that's going to get started next week and continue on for a while. So if you want to call in today, it's 877-235-9405. You can find this show on Facebook at Woods and Water SC, Instagram, hashtag Woods and Water SC Radio, on the web at woodsandwatersc.com. And thanks to the wonders of the Apple App Store, we now have a text line. If you don't want to call in, you can text us. The Woods and Water official text line is 864-441-9572. If you don't want to call in, you can text us. And if you want to call in, don't go on the line. Don't want to go on the air. Dave's got this number. He can give it to you if you want to just call him. I made sure he keeps me up on this stuff. Big thumbs up. And we are celebrating the heat of summer with, yes, get ready for the drive-thrus at Chick-fil-A to light up with another peach milkshake. Oh, man, those things are so good. So good. Anyway, welcome to the show. Couple of, if you didn't know it, this Thursday, Friday, and today, the Carhartt College Bass Championships are being held up in Wisconsin. I believe it's Wisconsin. I could have it wrong. Wisconsin, Minnesota, either one. I think it's in Wisconsin. The South Carolina teams, they were there. Three of them from Clemson, one of them from South Carolina, one of them familiar from South Carolina, Patrick Walters, who actually won the FLW College Championships, and they're getting ready to here next month go to Lake Washita in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and fish. So the finish that we had, the three teams from Clemson, Burns and Nesbitt finished 13th, Ronimus and Tinsley finished 29th, and Romy and Garvin 64th. Patrick and his partner Josh Rennebaum finished 15th. Congratulations to all those guys. In the college championships, at least on the BASS side, they only fished the top five teams the last day. The FLW fished top 10. So, but as would have it, I still know somebody fishing the BASS college, or the Carhartt. Excuse me, I have to get the sponsorships right. And that is Chris Bergen. Chris was on the show last year. Chris and his partner from the University of Minnesota qualified for the FLW Cup last year on Lake Murray, and Chris was fishing the co-angler side, actually brought off the big bass prize on Thursday. I think he paid him out $500 or something like that. That was a pretty nice fish and just made Chris's whole tournament, I think. But anyway, Chris and his partner are in fourth place. So it'll be interesting to see as soon as the show is off to kick back and tune into the weigh-in and see how they're doing. So it's pretty cool meeting these kids, and Chris, he was all excited yesterday. We made it. And you can imagine, because this is qualifying them to go to, you know, to BASS, to the Classic next year. So just some news for you. Anything else on here? No, I don't think anything. So let's, I'm going to run over this segment a little bit with the calendar events, but let's get to the calendar. You know, it's hot out there, but, you know, still, you just need to go and do some things. Just drink plenty of water. Stay hydrated. Today and tomorrow, if you're looking for something to do this weekend, and in a pretty cool little place to go, both scenery and in temperature, is Kings Mountain National Military Park over in Blacksburg, South Carolina. The 71st Highland Regiment is going to have an encampment there today and tomorrow from, let's see, well, it's all day, really. What they're going to do is, it was one of the more important regiments in the American Revolution, serving in both the Northern and Southern campaigns. Come learn more about this unit's history, weapons, tactics, and their role in the American Revolutions. Weapons demonstrations will be held throughout the event. So, like I said, it's a neat little drive up 85 from wherever you're coming up, or up 26, and they're kind of up on little mountains. It's a little cooler and lots of shaded areas, and also pretty nice place to go. And if we didn't have enough peaches, this past Thursday, Friday, and today, and again the 16th through the 19th, you got the South Carolina Peach Festival over right down the road here in Gaffney, South Carolina. And lots of good peachy things to going on. They got carnival rides and games, 10 bands, arts and crafts, parade, wrestling. That's got to be interesting. Cornhole, dessert contest. I'm sure you know what the dessert contest would contain. Lots of peaches. Dog show, much more. If you're there on Friday, it's 6 p.m. They have this coinciding with a South Carolina Barbecue Association event over in at the Peach Festival. So on Friday at 6 o'clock, you can actually have a wing tasting from all the teams competing at the Barbecue Association competition. And then on Saturday, of course, you can get all the sampling of the barbecue you want. So two good things, peaches and barbecue. Gotta love South Carolina. Then we're going to go on. This is a pretty cool one down along the coast. Junior Naturalist Loving Loggerheads. Friday, July the 17th, learn more about South Carolina state reptile, the loggerhead sea turtle, which I believe right now their nests are hatching along the coast. I think the first one was reported like a week or so ago. We'll understand its life cycle and create a mock loggerhead nest, hands-on science discovery, journaling, and art. Encourage children to have fun while learning about the natural world. So ages 8 to 12, adult chaperones are welcome to attend and require no registration. This is going to be at Kiowa Beachwalker Park, Kiowa Island. Contact is 843-795-4386. It's from 10:30 to 12 in the morning. So if you're down there in Charleston next Friday, be a good thing you might want to go do. And off the, I mean, have this on the calendar, at Edisto Beach State Park, you can actually go on a loggerhead sea turtle hike at night with one of the rangers. You can go to the South Carolina State Parks website and find out more about that. I got this email, volunteer action alert, volunteers needed Noisette Creek Oyster Build. This again is this coming Friday the 17th. We're excited to partner with South Carolina Ports Authority and the Department of Natural Resources for restoration efforts in Noisette Creek, seeking volunteers to assist in an oyster reef build. Volunteers will meet at Riverfront Park in North Charleston at 2 o'clock. We'll be placing bags of oyster shells in the intertidal zone to promote oyster growth, improve water quality, and protect the shoreline from erosion. You need to bring water. No, you don't. They're going to provide it. Water, sunscreen, and gloves will be provided, but please wear closed-toed shoes and come prepared for outdoor work. I'd say come prepared to get up close and personal with some pluff mud. But that's a good volunteer. And if you've never seen an oyster recycling program, in the fall and winter and spring, Department of Natural Resources will have bins set up. You have an oyster roast. You go dump your oysters back. They recycle and put them back in. And if you go to the Woods and Water South Carolina Facebook page, there are some pictures of some of that, those oysters on a barge in Charleston Harbor. I believe it's upstream on the Cooper side that one of my friends, Hoppy Hopkins, down in Charleston posted of them actually replanting oysters. So they do take them, put them back in. And I believe it was last year I was down in Beaufort at Waddell Mariculture Center. And along one side of the ramps, they had the bags placed there kind of at that mid-tide zone. So big good thing for you to do. And if you have love oysters, always remember to recycle them. Like I said, I'm going to run over with the calendar. Hang on through the break. We're back on the other side with this. And then we've got some stories to get into. See you on the other side. folks, this is why I bring Dave peach milkshakes, bribe him any way I can. I mean, look, okay, bring it up. That's exactly what I'm talking about. The heat is on. Thank you, Dave. And it's going to be here for a while, like I said before. But you know, there's no better way to break the heat than with some water. And the Spartanburg water, which I guess is the Spartanburg, let's see here, it's got it. Spartanburg Water System and Spartanburg Sanitary Sewer District is putting on a great day, July the 18th. And like I said, to break the heat, all you need to do is add a little water. This is Paddle Fest, 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., 1925 Sandy Ford Road in Chesney, South Carolina, Paddle Fest 2015. Outdoor enthusiasts and paddlers of all skill levels will be treated to a day of tours, races, classes, and safety seminars at Lake Blaylock Park. Paddle Fest is free. There's a nominal fee required to participate in safety and self-rescue classes. Registration is required. Among the new features this year, and this sounds pretty cool, is a cardboard kayak design and building contest. Children and their parents will be given some direction and have about 4 hours to design and build a boat from recycled cardboard. They'll paddle their boats in a race at the end of the day, attempting to make it 100 yards. I wonder if you can bring your own duct tape. I can make a canoe last 100 yards with duct tape. Also on tap for this year's events are kayak safety and self-rescue classes taught by upstate locals Al and Janie Butcher, also known as Sea Kayakers 2. The couple enjoys paddling all the upstate lakes as well as paddling at the South Carolina coast. They'll be teach a part-time touring flatwater and sea kayaking as independent instructors for private groups and paddling clubs in the Carolinas. They're members of the Foothills Paddling Club and co-organizers of Greenville Sea Kayakers Meetup Group. Pretty cool. So they're going to offer some tour and self-guided educational paddle tours, kayaks, canoes, stand-up paddleboard races, seminars, classes, and a paddle demo area. So, like I said, pretty cool just to add water and break the heat. Day-long access onto Lake Blaylock will be granted with registration. And if you've got a non-powered watercraft you want to use on Lake Bowen or Lake Blaylock, you can get an annual pass for $5 there at Paddle Fest 2015. So, good way to get out there. Now, and the next one is even better. It's for the kids. I don't know if these camps are full or not. There's no way I can know other than call somebody. But anyway, I want to get it back out there. From the Clemson Extension website, they have the 4-H2O camps this summer. It's giving students the opportunity to explore South Carolina's rich waterways, learn about water quality and importance of healthy ecosystems. I know they have these in Berkeley, Charleston, and Dorchester. You may want to check, but that again is the Clemson Extension website. Go to the Clemson. If you go to the Extension website, you can pick your county and see all they've got. This is one that's up there in several counties. And it's good. It's for ages 10 to 13 years old. And like I said, what a better way to break the heat than just add some water. Quality Deer Management Association. Now, we're not in the heat of summer. It's kind of hard to get excited about. Well, I take that back. It is pretty exciting to get talk about hunting again. But Lakeland's branch of Quality Deer Management Association, and Lakeland's is down in Greenwood, South Carolina, is offering a hunter education class. If you are born after June 30th, 1979, and are a South Carolina resident or non-resident, you need a South Carolina hunter education class before you can hunt. So Lakeland's branch is giving this hunter education course, sponsoring its first come, first serve. It's free. You must pre-register at the Department of Natural Resources website. That is www.dnr.sc.gov. A break will be provided. And lunch will be provided on site. All children under 12 years of age must be accompanied by a parent or guardian, and the minimum age to take the exam and be certified is 10. So again, that's going to be in Greenwood, South Carolina. That's the Main Street United Methodist Church, July 21st, 8:30 a.m., lunch at 12 for 4:30, doors close, and you are certified. And the last one for this week is our friends over at Glendale Outdoor Leadership School. Their summer day camp, the second session, is July 20th through the 24th. This fun-filled active camp exposes kids to all the outdoor recreation we have to offer, including rock climbing, mountain biking, hiking, kayaking, and more. Environmental education is combined with art history and exploring our natural surroundings. All activities take place at our facility and along the Glendale Greenway and Glendale Shoals. And that's right here in Glendale, South Carolina. Their website is www.set.goals, SETGOLS.com. I encourage y'all with kids to get them involved and get them out some of these summer camps this year. And we've covered a bunch of them here in South Carolina. I'm going to be heading down to, I think it's Wildwood 3, the third week in July. That's the coastal camp. I'm going to go down and be a guest of Dan Dupree down there and see what they do in the salt marsh. See, I'm trying to think here. What have I got time to fit in? I think we'll start here. In the news, and of course, Dave and I were in there earlier talking about Shark Week. We have had some shark attacks. Public service announcement. People, when you go to the beach, there are sharks. They live there. You know, you feel kind of funny saying that, but when I was younger and we go to the beach in the summertime, we'd live practically all week out on the pier. And you'd be catching these little 12, 18-inch sharks. And every once in a while, somebody would pull a 3 or 4 foot one up there. And you'd have people out on the pier going, wow, look at that. What are they doing here? And the same thing with jellyfish. They live there. That's their home. We're the ones that are kind of invading their backyard for summertime. So there are sharks there. This one, I've read a bunch of articles and you know, you get all sorts of opinions from the apocalypse is coming to, you know, who knows what. But this one is pretty good. It's written by Elizabeth Palermo. She's a staff writer for LiveScience.com. And this is just about the North Carolina ones. You know, two people were bitten. At that point, there was 5 shark attacks in North Carolina under 3 weeks. While some have speculated that shark fishing in the area is responsible for this uptick, others say reasons are probably a bit more complicated than just blaming it on the fishermen. But they do have a point with the fishing, especially along the piers and jetties where people fish. But we'll get into this. These attacks were off Oak Island June 14th. 2 of them within, 90 minutes of each other, within 100 yards of the fishing pier was where they were swimming. And there is a good deal of chumming, baiting going on right there. Fishermen cleaning their catch. So there is some of that, but that's been going on forever. Like I said, when I was, I guess I would have been 13, 14 years old when we were started going on the pier at Myrtle Beach. That was going on then. So I don't think that there have been some changes in fishing for sharks as far as the regulations from state to state. You can't target them. Of course, we didn't target them off the pier anyway, but you can't target them. But there again, some people now are taking kayaks to the beach, running 100, 150 yards off into the surf and putting like half bonitas as bait. So there is some of that you can probably say, but this article talks about the perfect storm. It says, while fishing practices may help explain some of it, they don't necessarily tell the whole story. And it goes on, a number of other factors could be turning the waters off North Carolina into the perfect place for a shark attack. One of the surprising factors involves rainfall. Now listen to this. This is pretty interesting. Parts of North Carolina have been abnormally dry or have experienced moderate drought conditions for several weeks. This is according to the North Carolina Division of Water Resources. This means salinity or salt content of ocean water close to shore is higher than usual. With the exception of bull sharks, which bull sharks have been logged way up freshwater rivers, most all sharks prefer higher salinity waters. So you have lower salinity waters coming in from an estuary or river, you'll find that sharks tend to stay further away in the more salty water. But with the decreased freshwater intrusion, you have an increased salt content of the water, and that could be bringing the sharks closer to shore more than usual. And sharks aren't the only fish seen to be milling around close to the beaches of late. Large schools of Atlantic menhaden, it's a type of herring, have been spotted very close to the North Carolina coast in recent weeks. The oily fish is a rich source of nutrients for sharks, which tend to follow large schools of menhaden along the coast. The fish, which known to jump fairly high, they are also preyed on by diving birds, are easy for beachgoers to spot from the shore. People see the bait fish, and they don't know to get out of the way because the predators follow the prey. Other prey animals, such as baby sea turtles, we mentioned that earlier, can also encourage sharks to come close to shore. Many sea turtles have hatched along certain North Carolina beaches in recent weeks, and they journey into the Atlantic waters. Hungry sharks are waiting just offshore. So two pretty good reasons. Remember, you're a tourist. This is the best one. Now the people in the state know that with some certainty, there are a lot of sharks out there. They need to take some responsibility for their own safety. Don't let your kids go out. You don't let your kids go play in traffic, and we have to be careful when we let them swim. Beachgoers need to take some action on their own. I think, Dave and I were talking earlier, and I hate to keep bringing Dave up. We had a fair amount of time to waste today. I got here a little bit earlier. We were talking about, if you looked at the beaches, first of all, they're crowded. And something says the shark's really just looking for a way to get back out to the ocean from all the beachgoers. But if a shark was really intent on eating you, it wouldn't just stop with a bite. And I think especially on the East Coast, you've got stained or dingy water. You've got a lot of people in the water. And you probably got a lot of people wearing watches, rings, necklaces, that sort of thing. And it's just an innate reaction and a predator like a shark when they have a flash of something to bite because it looks like menhaden. Have you ever seen menhaden? They flash silver. So along with that, look for these pods of bait fish because predators do. I mean, one of the best things you can do when you're fishing is to find birds or bait balls. And you know the predators are going to be there. It may not be sharks, but they're there. And if you have any clue or want to know how many sharks are out there, log on to some fishing charter's webpage and look what they're doing right now. They are shark fishing. And all they're doing is taking cut bait, sinking it to the bottom with a big heavy weight, and sitting back and waiting. The sharks are there, people. But I don't think they're out to eat us. Most of these bites, they're just grabbing it. They figure out it's not what they wanted. They're letting go. So take off your jewelry when you get in the water. Another thing they're saying here is don't swim early and late. More predators feed earlier and late than in the heat of the day. So early and late, you might want to be careful in the water. My rule of thumb is if you can't see the hairs on the top of your big toe, don't go in the water. That's just me. But that comes from years of going down to the west coast of Florida and that crystal clear water. And then if you go fishing, how many sharks you catch. So I don't think we're in there. And I think shark attacks worldwide are down. There was a story about that. So just be careful when you're out there. Don't not go in the water. Just be aware when you're there. Hang on through the break. We'll come back with how to tip your guide on a fishing trip. Dave's feeling good in here today. Mixing it up a little bit, making it fun. I appreciate it. Summertime. You love some of the comments on a story like what we got through with the sharks. I'm a little disturbed at the assertion in this article that recreational fishing increases the risk of shark attack. The next lady is traffic deaths due to drunk driving or due to texting other than distracted driving worry me way, way, way more than being bitten by a shark. Somebody else chimes in with, I also wanted to add the Navy is doing sonar testing everywhere. That's been a good one for years and years and years. Oh, and I have a running argument going on about how far I go in on the, yeah. My little blonde-haired and blue-eyed daughter is at home. She's 2 weeks away from knee surgery, that knee straightened out so she can get back up off the couch and off the crutches and all. And, oh, come on, you go in further than that. Look, young lady, I'll deal with you when I get home. But anyway, that's it. Just be aware. Just be aware. The sharks are there. It's their home. If you see those bait balls running up and down the beach, just get out of the water. And as I remember, when we were down there, the lifeguards usually would pull you out of the water when those things went down the beach. But like I said, if you've looked at the beaches lately, they're awfully packed, and I think the sharks are really just looking for a way to get back out to the ocean. I have a lot of friends who are guides. I never guided fishing trips, but I guided quail hunts back more than a few years ago when I had my own bird dogs. And the question of tips always comes up. I've had this story for several months, and actually I went and found a better one when I started to plan this one, this show, and talk about this story. But I do have a lot of friends down along the coast who are fishing guides along the coast, the lakes around, and it's all about tips. And I don't know, not having guided a fishing trip, I don't know how they feel about it, but I know one specific bird hunting guide session that I did was a 6-hour trip, and I carried a 5-year-old around on my shoulder for 4 of those 6 hours. And it's one of those things, you knew when they showed up, that kid was just not going to last. I mean, when you quail hunt, you are covering some territory. And sure enough, it wasn't but about 2 hours into it when, after a half an hour of the dad yelling at the kid, "Come on, let's go," I just picked the kid up, put him on my shoulders, and walked him around for the next 4 hours, and I got a $20 tip. You know, in 1993 or 4, that was probably pretty good, but it wasn't near worth the ache in my shoulders that night. So that's my guide experience, but I know a lot of my friends are fishing guides, and this is one thing that's a common question of people that go, how much do you tip your guides? And each guide may not say on their website. So it's summertime. A lot of people are going out. They're fishing. They're hiring guides. So this was a good one. This is off the Mid-Current webpage. It's by Marshall Cutchin. How to Tip Fishing Guides and Lodges. And he starts out with a little bit of what his own, a story of his own. He says, "I'd like to tell about tipping involves a gentleman known among his friends appropriately as Wild Phil. Phil used to place a $100 bill in plain sight on the console of my skiff, and whenever he jumped a tarpon, he would get down and hand me the $100. And one day after we jumped 9 tarpon in just a couple of hours, I was struck by the relative absurdity of this relationship, and I said, 'Phil, you don't need to be so generous.' Phil thought about this for a few seconds, then said, 'You're right. I want you to know that I'm grateful, but I don't want you to think I'm stupid.' And so it is with tipping and fishing. Understand a little bit about how your guide or lodge personnel are capped and are compensated, and with the general expectations, follow your instincts." So here we go. General guidelines. With the amount of traveling fishermen do, it's surprising that there aren't well-publicized standards for tipping guides. Something like the $1 to $2 per bag rule for airport sky caps. I think it was 5 the last time I went out there. And hotel bellmen in the U.S. But just as guides and lodges in different parts of the world charge different rates for the same services, they can also have very different expectations of what makes a fair gratuity. You may have some fixed rules of your own, like 15% for service people or 20% if they've done an outstanding job. But following those rules in all foreign countries may do a disservice to other anglers and to lodge management. And it talks about a backlash fee, when not fee, you suggest, you know. The short answer to these questions is that tipping etiquette in the fishing business follows the same general rules that apply to all service industry workers in a given country. In the U.S., for example, gratuities of more than 20% mean you were extremely happy about the experience. Tipping less than 10% means you were dissatisfied, but communicates to the provider that you know tipping is customary. Now, I want to set this off. Fishing guides are not just fishing guides. And it goes into a little bit of that in here. Independent guide, Florida skiff guides and light tackle offshore guides, New England and California striper guides, Texas bass and coastal redfish guides, trout, salmon, steelhead guides, not part of a lodge setting, whether booked by an outfit or not, should all be considered independent guides as far as tipping concern. And a guide is not just a guide. He can be your best friend. He can be a tour guide. He can be a sightseeing guide. He's a photographer. He's a conversationalist. He puts his life at risk, so to speak, to give you an experience out on the water. And you need to take that into when you go to eat, you know the price of what you eat. When you go book a fishing guide, it may be $250, $300, $350, $400, $1,000. Offshore, maybe $3,000. But those guides, they're working hard. And those guide fees, they go to pay for boat, gas, bait, gear, And you wouldn't believe how many people will pick up a spinning rod and reel backwards and spin off the handle. And, of course, the guy's got another reel ready for you to do the same thing if that's what it takes. So that's the part of the guide fee pays for that, the boat, the gas, the insurance, the tackle, everything like that. The tip is kind of just like your regular server. If that server never lets your glass get less than halfway full, it's a good server. You don't ever have to ask for a refill. If a good guide is running around, he's helping your kids reel fish in when they get tired, he's taking pictures of you, dolphins start following the boat, and he pulls over and lets the dolphin catch up. Ooh, ah, look at the dolphins and all that. You know, it's those are the things you have to keep in mind. And there are some pretty basic tips for how you're supposed to treat a guide and what's expected of you. Show up 5 or 10 minutes early. Don't make your guide wait, especially early in the morning, because like a doctor, he's got a schedule. And if you're late, he's not going to stay out longer just because you weren't there on time. Be pleasant company and fish well. Can't fish well? Try hard. That's what a good guide expects. Don't get angry or frustrated to the point where it is interfering with the experience. You're out there to have fun. Don't talk on your cell phone while tarpon or sipping crabs from the surface 20 feet in front of the boat. Don't treat taking your guide out to dinner as part of the gratuity. Most hardworking guides consider the opportunity to spend precious evening hours with their clients part of their workday, not a bonus. Most guides I know want to go home at the end of a day, take a shower, put their feet up, and drink something cold. Unlike independent guides, there are many variations on the accepted standards for tipping at lodges on package trips, so gather as much information as you can before arriving. General guidelines for tipping at lodges include the following. Count on an extra 7 to 12% of the total package cost. Carry it either as cash in your carry-on bag, which is best, or in the form of a personal check or traveler's checks. Suggestions for total tips will range from 5% to 15%. However, depending on your booking agent, the destination, and the total package price, so be sure to ask the agent or the lodge manager. Don't let anyone convince you that you'll be expected to pay more than 7-8% in gratuities on an $8,000 trip. And just in case you're curious, 60 to 70% of these tips typically end up with the guides, and the rest is distributed to the non-guiding staff, like the cooks and that sort of thing. More often than not, you'll be better off leaving a collective gratuity for your entire stay with the lodge manager at the end of the trip. The reasons for this are not readily apparent, but they include the fact that over-tipping individuals makes it more difficult for the lodge manager to control the expectations and behavior of the staff, which is something to be said. If you do want to tip a guide working from a lodge operation directly, a $40 to $60 tip per day is the norm, at least in Alaska. Cash rules no matter where you go, and I don't like to say paying cash, but in tipping with guides, it's kind of the rule. Don't expect to give them a credit card. Traveler's checks may be okay, but cash is king, and we kind of know what that is. Tipping for offshore and other special types of angling excursions. Granted, they're a lot more expensive. You know, an offshore trip out of Charleston's $25, $26, $2,800 now for an all-day Gulfstream trip. The average gratuity for most operations work out to be around $50 for the captain, $25 for each crew member for the entire boat, whether there are four anglers, only one. Now, I tend to disagree with that. I'd tip a little bit more for that, especially when you got a mate down there who's, you know, he's making sure all the lines are out. He's pulling, he's gaffing the fish. He's the one getting beat up by a green fish on the deck and trying to get your hook back out of the fish's mouth, put it in the fish box. So, but those are just some very loose guidelines. Remember, that guide is doing a lot more than just riding you around on the water. So, for what it's worth, this summer when you have a guided fishing trip, and you can draw these conclusions back to freshwater too, that was written from a saltwater standpoint, there you go. Now you've got something to go on. Go book a trip. Go fishing. Have some fun. We'll be back on the other side of the break. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. And the text line works. Got a question here. What are bait balls? Well, that's a bait balls, it's what we call them. They're more offshore balling. I mean, you'll have bait that's in a school, and it's – Google it. But all the bait will ball up, and the whatever predator fish around the outside, they're cutting off the exterior, kind of the stragglers on the outside. And from, I guess, from the little bait fish's standpoint, the deeper you are into the ball, the safer you are. But along the coast, what you're really looking for is you're looking for birds circling. I mean, to any fisherman, that's a sign of bait. Look for dark spots in the water, froth, you know, and you're seeing these little fish come to the top of the water and kind of churn top of the water. And a lot of times, and that's when you see the birds. The birds will be right there on top because the bait, the predator fish, whatever they are, redfish, tuna, whatever, they're underneath taking whatever bait they can get, and the birds are on top of the water. And if the bait's small enough, the birds are feeding off the bait themselves. But a lot of times, they're just picking up the scraps, whatever parts of dead menhaden or mullet or whatever floating to the top, that's what they're eating. So thank you for that question. I was at archery practice the other night, my daughter's archery practice, and I was talking to a mom there, and she was lamenting the fact that, you know, there's really not much for women to do in the outdoors in South Carolina. She said, you know, when the National Turkey Federation was offering their Women's Outdoor Day, it was a one day come down to the National Wild Turkey Federation headquarters in Edgefield and spend the day just kind of learning about the outdoors, hands-on, but not having to dive into it. So, and I know every year this happens, and I'm going to get it out there a little bit earlier this year, and it never fails to ceases to amaze me that these things fill up so fast. This is the from the South Carolina Wildlife Federation's website. It's the Women's Outdoor Retreat. It's held September through the 11th this year at Hickory Knob State Park in McCormick, South Carolina. Online registration is already closed. You can download a registration form here and mail it in. They'll take the registration forms in the order they have it as space permits. But this is really the big ladies event left in South Carolina. And I'm going to see if we can't, you know, there's tons of us stuff to do for us guys, tons of stuff to do for our kids in the outdoors. But I don't know, a lot of moms don't want to get so deep into it. They don't want to go to a 3-day course. They just want to go, you know, experience it. And if you're like me, I don't teach very well. The one time I took my wife deer hunting, we almost left her in the tree. that was a fun little outing. But every year, the South Carolina Wildlife Federation offers this Women's Outdoor Retreat. And it's sponsored by Cabela's and South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, Stone Point Archery, Lake Thurman Salem Power Squadron, Adventure Carolina, and several others. It's held at Hickory Knob State Park in McCormick, South Carolina. It's about 2 hours west of Columbia. It's open to females age 16 and older. There's no maximum age. You check in at 11:30 on Friday the 11th. The first class begins at 1:30. The last class concludes at noon on Sunday. Registration is $90 per person. Refunds, yeah, you can get refunds. They have t-shirts for $10. Food. Meals will be available at the park restaurant for a separate cost. Overnight accommodations. Hickory Knob's accommodations include motel rooms and cabins. Camping is also available. You need to arrange for your own lodging. What they have there is reserved for this retreat. Says rooms are expected to sell out, reserve yours early. And then a hotel room is $89 a night, two double beds, private bathrooms, cabins $118, campsites $22. So, and you can stay at other, like they list Colors Inn in Lincolnton, Georgia, Elijah Clark State Park, Savannah Lakes, a couple other places. Classes. You'll choose 10 classes. You'll be assigned as many as your choices as possible, a minimum of 6 and up to 8 workshops. Most classes last approximately 1 hour and 45 minutes, but some are 4 hours. Class descriptions. And this is where it gets really fun. If you're like me and you know, you have someone in your family that is just all into this, and that is my daughter Taylor, or your wife would like to get involved, you're dating, or and your prospective wife wants to know what she's getting into, or if you're married and just want to do something together, here's a way to let her get involved and experience a whole lot of this stuff. She can come away with what she likes, what she doesn't like, and you can take it from there. But archery, I have learned, it's a lot of fun to do archery with somebody else. I never had a bow. I never had time for it until now. And it's fun. But they teach archery here. Backyard wildlife habitat. You know, we try to do a little bit of that around our house every year. We got some piles of trash, or we let a briar thicket go and just see what comes. And usually we have rabbits, birds, you know, something you can do in your own backyard, dependent, and it doesn't matter if you live in a subdivision or not. Birding. They got a master wildlife conservationist there to help you improve your birding skills, how to use a field guide, identifying marks and calls. You need a good pair of binoculars to do a good birding. So there you go. You send her to this, you buy her a good pair of binoculars, and then she's got those. Mine sit beside the back door, and we use them all the time. Canoeing. Summertime, we've got plenty of water here in South Carolina. One of the most relaxing ways to enjoy the outdoors. They teach them how to paddle a canoe, which if you're me, trying to teach somebody how to paddle a canoe, I get frustrated because they're just not doing it like I want them to do it. So there is, it is good to have a disconnect there. Civil War history. I do a hands-on program intended to give a better perspective of the life of the Southern soldier during the war between the states. Have a chance to see and handle military equipment and uniforms, experience rifle musket drill, and immersed in the campaign life of a common soldier. You'll taste the cooking, wear a battle jacket, and participate in an artillery drill. Fish cleaning and cooking. Now, if you can get your wife to fish clean, clean fish, and then cook them, hats off to you. Learn to prepare, clean, prepare, and cook your catch of the day from South Carolina's many lakes and streams. Freshwater fishing, they teach you the basics of fishing. Geocaching, that's something that a lot of people, I understand, is real popular. And somebody was showing me an app the other day, and it just had geocache locations all over the place. So geocaching, that's something you can do together. It doesn't require getting that dirty, I don't think. Kayaking intro. Recreational kayaking is a huge thing. It allows you to float on a peaceful river or paddle around a pond to enjoy it. Take like Lansford Canal State Parks when the water lilies, the spider lilies are there. They teach basic paddling strokes, safety techniques, self-rescue, and more. Kudzu basketry. Now, that one, okay. That's got to be a chick thing. They do a Lake Thurman paddle. Map and compass reading. Nature fitness. Get ready to have a fun time exercising and learning how to use nature and surroundings for a total body workout without ever having to step foot in a gym. That's pretty cool. Nature photography. Use your own digital camera to take beautiful scenic shots and outdoor family photos. Gain knowledge about your camera settings, digital filters, options, and accessories. Bring your camera and your owner's manual, and they'll teach you how to use it. Outdoor cooking. See how cooking with cast iron and camp ovens is made easy through proven techniques and the sharing of recipes. And every year when we go to the Chattooga River camping, we do a Dutch apple cobbler on a campfire, and it has got to be one of the best things I have ever put in my mouth. Paddling safety. Sailing. Take you out on the deck of a sailboat. Teach you how to do this. Skeet shooting and firearm safety. There are tons of articles out there about how women are getting involved in the shooting sports, whether it's for self-protection, to spend time with their families, or they just enjoy shooting things. They teach you how to do this. They even throw some clay pigeons for you. Tennis, if you like that, there's that. Walk on the wild side, coming along with a naturalist on an exploration of the park as she interprets the great diversity of wildlife and other features. There's a few other things there I can get to. But anyway, for you ladies, this is where you need to be if you want to get involved in the outdoors, or just have a, hey, grab one of your best friends and go have fun for the weekend, being outdoors. I'm going to find out why we don't have more, maybe try to get some more things started. But anyway, that's for you ladies. Go get involved in your outdoors. We go on hikes, and that's good. We're going, actually, tomorrow we're going to go to waterfall hiking. And it's just it's that time in nature with your family. It's just irreplaceable. And if you've ever watched, there's a USDA or U.S. Forest Service video out there. It was a TV commercial, and it's called Animals Kidnap a Family. Watch that. It's just a PSA. It's cool. They get kidnapped by a bunch of furry critters and taken out to a forest, and it's good. And that actually happens. I mean, you see, when you get out there and see what's out there, you get lost in it. One last thing, South Carolina Wildlife Federation, their photo contest ends the 15th. That would be, let's see, 12th. That's Wednesday. You got Carolina Critters, scenes from South Carolina. You can submit 3 photographs of each category. There is a cost, and there is prizes involved. So that's coming up here. If you like to take your nature photography, there are some rewards here, and I think it's pretty cool. I'm getting to be a better photographer. Not there quite yet. Busy week coming up. Talked to Anthony Gagliardi. We haven't been able to connect because he was fishing the FLW. I was gone to Canada. He's actually fishing the BASS Opens this year, so he just finished up fishing yesterday. He didn't make the cut. We're going to touch base this week. He debuts his level rods at ICAST. So look for those to be. I'm not sure exactly where they're going to retail those things at, but they're coming. They're good rods. I've got one of them. I enjoyed it. Chuck for this week, for those of you at the beach, this is not about sharks. The moon doesn't control the tide. Chuck just swims in the ocean twice a day. It's going to be a good week. I'm going to be down at ICAST. It's the biggest fishing show there is. Going to see a lot of people. Who knows who I'll bring back to the airwaves next week or the week after. But while I'm gone, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget that camera. Hope you have a good week, and I'll talk to you later.